Robert, thank you. All right, everyone.
All right, Mr. Chair, the meeting is recording and broadcasting. The floor is yours.
Thank you. So here we are for the September 17th meeting of the Board of Directors of the Cambria Community Services District, and calling this meeting to order. And I contacted Cindy kind of late, so she wasn't able to prepare what I'd like to do today, but considering what's happening to Mother Earth, considering what's happening to so many people in our country right now, I thought we would still remind ourselves of the beauty that exists in this nation, the people and nature. So hopefully enough of us remember the first stanza to America the Beautiful. I'm just going to try to do it off the top of my head by myself. It starts with, "Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain," and hopefully you remember the rest of it. So, "Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain,
for purple mountains, for purple
majesty,
above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea." So hopefully as time moves on into this coming decade, we can not only embrace our connectedness with Mother Earth as we never have before, and also a sense of brotherhood too. All right, we have a quorum. Everybody's here, ready to roll. Any deletions or additions to the agenda? Everyone there? No? Okay. Any acknowledgments? I don't believe so. So, public safety, Commander Nelson is not here with us. I'll just briefly give us an update. I know the members of the board can see this on their agenda packet, but for those of you in the public, just a quick one. Calls for service. This year, we've had 407. At this time last year, it was 354, so it's obviously an increase of 53. I can't give us any details on why that is. There were 17 calls for disturbance, nothing notable. There were a couple of burglaries. There was an attempted vehicle burglary in the 500 block of Plymouth Street. A neighbor scared off the suspect. That's very cool. Nothing was taken from the vehicle. Deputies were unable to locate the suspect. And obviously, if there's anything we all need to do, is when you have your vehicle out there on the street, make sure that it's locked. Also, there were 6 thefts, including this one. A suspect stole shoes off of a front porch in the 5400 block of Nottingham Drive. So the deputies located the suspects, the shoes were returned to the victim, and charges were filed with the DA's office with regard to theft. And no vandalism, no mail theft, no phone scams, and 10 suspicious circumstances. And of course, one of those could include this meeting, but we'll move on beyond that. So moving on to item 3A, or 3B, excuse me. And Chief Hollingsworth, how are you today? Haven't seen you in a while, buddy.
Good afternoon, President Farmer, members of the board. I'm doing well. It's good to be here today. Calls for service for last month were at 65, which is a little bit of a downturn, where it's a big fluctuation right now because of the ongoing issues related to COVID. We've had a total of 585 emergency responses for the year. This last month, we had 2 fires, one relatively small one, and the larger one down at the intersection of Burton Drive and Main Street, which I've already reviewed with you. I've been in contact with the owner there, and they're in the middle of coordinating efforts between 2 or 3 different insurance companies, the county code enforcement, and other issues in relation to how quickly they can move towards demolition and possibly replacing that building. So they have some logistical issues to work on, but they're still working on trying to get through all of the stuff that goes along with that. Most importantly, I think, is to give you a really quick update on the Dolan fire, which is the vegetation fire that's burning north of here up in Monterey County. It's a little bit over 125,000 square acres as of this morning. They have numerous resources, lots of air resources Because of where it is, it's very limiting, very difficult terrain to get crews and equipment into, which means that's why they're using a lot more air resources than normal. Right now, it is pretty much staying north of Plaskett Ridge, if you're familiar with where that road is. And it looks like the majority of the heat of this fire is burning off towards Fort Hunter Liggett. That doesn't reduce the possibility of it coming farther south. We're still at least 12 miles north of the county line at this point, and it's still burning in that direction, the southeasterly direction towards the Fort Hunter Liggett property. What we're noticing is if you look at satellite pictures, obviously the air quality outside is poor. Today it's a little bit better. It's pushing out over the ocean, and then at different altitudes, it's coming back in, and that's why we're getting that haze and that smoke in the morning. And depending on what direction the wind is moving, we might even get some raining ash a little bit. But right now, it's not too horribly bad, and we'll just keep an eye on that. And if we have additional very poor air quality warnings, we'll put out that information to the community so they can make the proper decisions on whether they should be spending that much time outside. Other than that, I'm over to you for any questions.
Any questions for the chief? Yes, Director Pearson.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I get the PowerPoint updates and stuff, and I'm just wondering what lift assist is. I see that quite often in Cambria. Could you just describe exactly what that call consists of?
Yes, Director Pearson. I believe you're referring to Pulse Point, which is the app on the phone. A lift assist is something we would categorize as a general public assist for the community. As a reminder, we live in an elderly community with an average age of about 60. And quite simply, when somebody is fallen down or unable to get up, they end up calling 911 for assistance. It doesn't necessarily mean there is a medical problem or an emergency, but they cannot physically get to where they need to go. It may also be coordinated with assisting somebody from a residence to a vehicle or back into a residence after a doctor's appointment during regular business hours. That's something we do as well.
Okay, good. Second question is, any news on the older fire truck?
Yes, we have finally been able to run the gauntlet of getting the title, which was... we were unable to get for quite a long time. We've turned everything in through the DMV. We had somebody working with us to spend their precious time down at the office to do that. It took a few hours. They've signed everything off. It's been turned into some office in Sacramento at the DMV, and we are only pending getting the new title back for it. As soon as we get the title, it'll be put on a low boy and sent south. So we already have a mission ready to go. We have documentation ready for them. It will be donated along with a whole bunch of other equipment, including other fire trucks from other agencies. But they're going to be sending a whole train of things down to the mission in Baja. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. That's great news. Thank you.
Yes.
So if I could just follow up a comment and a question with regard to what Director Pearson said with regard to lift assist. So about 2.5 years ago, I was having hernia surgery, and it was just a coincidence. I was at the farmer's market the week before, and it just so happened that the folks from the ambulance service from the healthcare district were there doing CPR for folks and those types of things. And someone said to me, well, Harry, they'll help you. And so I went over there and talked to them about, you know, getting hernia surgeries, be coming home. And they said, well, we'll be glad to assist you. Just call us when you're coming home from the hospital. So we called as we were going home, you know, on the phone, and they met us at my place. And anybody that's been to my place knows that with the stepping stones going up and around and everything, it's pretty difficult to traverse my place, even when you're just normally walking. And they were able to, you know, each for 4 people on the wheelchair, getting me up there, and it was no problem. So I would encourage anybody that has any kind of situation like that, where they know they're coming home from the hospital, you have to go upstairs, getting up to your house or inside the house, just contact the healthcare department folks, and they'll be able to assist you, no problem. And it's a courtesy, no cost. Also, Chief, I'd like to ask you about the structure fire there on Burton near Maine. You know, at first there was just that caution tape going around the parking lot and the structure itself. And now they have the green screens around there and around both the parking lot as well as the rear area as well. So just out of curiosity, and I know people are wondering, well, guy, there's already less parking because of, you know, the restaurants and everything. Why, just so people know, why is that parking lot portioned off? Is it because of the danger of the building collapsing or what?
That's exactly what the concern is. We immediately quarantined the building because of the visible fire danger and issues with how the roof looked like it was going to collapse. We contacted the county and they sent out an inspector and they actually pushed out the area where they thought it was safe. So that's why we initially only had the building or about 5 feet around the building and they pushed it out farther. It's a liability issue to have it pushed any closer. There is some discussion between the property owners and some of the business owners because obviously parking is a prime commodity down there. And there may be some possibilities for them to sign some waivers in regards to allowing some of those parking spots back. But until that building is brought down, I doubt that you're going to see much of the parking regained.
All right. Well, and so we don't need really have a length of time on that. It would probably depend on when the structure is ultimately taken down, right?
Yes, that is correct. And I spoke with the business owner or the property owner earlier today. And like I mentioned earlier, they are in the middle of all the discussions with the multiple insurances that are involved and trying to figure out who's going to be pointing the finger at whom and who's going to end up footing that bill. But I did stress with him that the urgency right now is to get the building brought down so we can at least eliminate that component of the any worry about it creating additional issues for the community.
All right, thank you. Director Ice has a question for you, Chief.
I actually don't know if this is a question for the Chief or Ms. Duffield or Mr. Weigold, but it is something related to the fire department, so I thought I'd ask now. We have on the expenditure report almost $44,000 for dispatch for calendar year 2019. What all happened there? I thought we got our dispatch through the sheriff office. Can you just kind of talk about what that is?
Sure, Director Rice, I'd be happy to address that. We contract with San Luis Obispo County Fire/CAL FIRE for all emergency dispatch services for the fire department. The majority of the fire departments in this county do the same. The only ones that do not are Paso Robles, Atascadero, and San Luis City, and they maintain their own dispatch centers with employees and computers and all that. All of the other incorporated, unincorporated, and county areas contract with CAL FIRE for a fee for that purpose. The only dispatch done by the Sheriff's Department is for the Sheriff's Department law enforcement and currently the ambulances in the county. However, that right now is in discussion, and the ambulances are going to be coming over to the CAL FIRE dispatch as well. So that is a for service hire, and we have to pay for that benefit. If we wanted to provide it ourselves, it would probably increase the dispatch costs at least 10 times, if not more.
No, we're definitely pairing with other, you know, that makes all kinds of sense. I was just curious as to why we were paying for calendar year 2019 when we're almost at the end of 2020.
They always bill after the fact.
All right. Thanks. That's good enough.
All right. Thank you. Anybody else have questions for the chief or comments? Seeing none, William, thank you so much. And you and the family have a real nice weekend, okay?
President Farmer?
All right. Yes, General Manager Weigold, my apologies.
So my apologies. We skipped over one acknowledgement. If we might be able to backtrack to that for a moment.
Oh, that's right. Mission Country Disposal, I believe, right?
That's correct.
Yes, go right ahead.
Terrific. And Jeff Claren, if you could, there he is. He's already enabled. Jeff Claren is our district manager for Mission Country Disposal, who provides our solid waste services for the district. And I wanted to officially acknowledge him in public, because they've been super helpful to the district to date through the COVID pandemic. There were several times where we were unable to execute our own solid waste disposal, primarily at the restrooms, as well as some other locations around town. And so Jeff and his team sprung into action with very little notice to pick up the slack when we needed it. And we've gone back and forth a couple of times when we've been hamstrung on manpower a couple of times during the COVID pandemic. So I also want to point out that over on the ranch, right across from the church on off of Route 1 there, we positioned a dumpster as well as a port-a-john. And we already recognized the Honey Huts organization, but we didn't get a chance to get Jeff on board because of his schedule. But we wanted to acknowledge him because he is providing that dumpster service to us on the ranch, which is really helping serve the homeless over there. And they're doing it gratis without any cost to the district right now. So I wanted to publicly acknowledge that. It's been a huge, huge help for us in the district. And so, Jeff, thanks so very much, one, for all you're doing for the district, as well as for being here this afternoon.
Well, thank you, General Manager Willie Gold, President Farmer, and members of the board. That's what we do. We're a service company here, and that's what we're here to serve. So thank you.
And Jeff, you probably have already heard this, but just to let you know that in speaking to some of the homeless, which I do, they really do appreciate that dumpster being over there. Just for them to be able to put stuff somewhere instead of just, you know, leaving it at their campsite and that type of thing. And I think if nothing else, having the porta potty in the dumpster there makes them feel as if somebody is tending to their needs. And, you know, these are people in really difficult circumstances in one fashion or another. So thank you so much for providing that and for doing it at no cost. It's a real service that's much appreciated by them as well as the community. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, you know, during this COVID timeframe, it's been very difficult with our operations and so forth. So, you know, to do things like this for the homeless, and, you know, I'm pretty sure it's difficult for them. So that was our pleasure to do that with your district there. So thank you. Thank you for the acknowledgement.
Thank you. You bet. And thank you, General Manager Weigold, for reminding me of that.
Thanks again, Jeff. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, guys.
Be well, Jeff.
Thank you, everyone.
And if I could just say one more thing. I think I speak for everybody that gets trash pickup in this town. Your people are so professional, always friendly, and always put the cans back pretty much where they got them. And it's just a nice thing. And they move over if you're driving up behind them. So they're always thinking about the public. So thank you.
Thank you. I will make sure to let our staff know.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye. Have a good weekend.
You too.
All right. Moving on to item number 4 and public comment. And Haley, I don't see any hands up. Do you have any written public comment at all? Christine Heinrichs just raised her hand.
Yeah, Christine is the only one I have a public comment for.
Okay. So I have a feeling Christine would rather talk than have it read. So if any way we can unmute her and just let her speak?
Yes, I've unmuted.
Okay. Go ahead, Christine. Or excuse me, Ms. Heinrichs.
Okay. I was disappointed to see that you're still using the webinar format for this meeting. Please change to the video conference format. No one has an expectation of privacy at a public meeting. If you're being advised that they do, get another opinion. The public wants to observe and participate and has a right to. Next, the fire's burning in the West Herald a new day. as Senator Ron Wyden said in a conference yesterday, these are not your grandfather's wildfires. You are now the governing board in Paradise, California, before the fire. We are Paradise. Now is the time to act. No other issue should take priority over protecting Cambria from fire, or in the event of fire, protecting Cambrians' lives. Cambria needs adequate evacuation routes. Cambria's narrow, winding streets, often obstructed by parked cars, are a disaster waiting to happen. Use your leadership now to address this problem. Widen streets, restrict parking, take whatever steps you can to improve this situation now. Make Cambria carbon neutral. Climate change is fueling these mega fires. Be a leader in reducing carbon emissions to zero. No new construction in Cambria. Cambria, the wildland urban interface, is already overbuilt. The water supply is overdrawn. No new construction in Cambria. Eliminate the water wait list. While it seemed like a way to manage a problem 20 years ago, that fantasy is over. Make whatever arrangements are needed to conclude it and get it done. Cambria, after spending itself into millions of dollars of debt on a non-functioning water project, has made every possible good faith effort to provide an alternative source of water for new construction. It isn't there, and this board needs to stop being distracted by it. I don't want to read news stories after Cambria burns up about how the local governing board knew of the danger and yet concerned itself with the pressures of further development when it was clear that the town needed to make protecting itself from fire the top priority. We are Paradise. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. I have a feeling, and obviously your points are well taken, I have a feeling that both Director Pearson and his Fire Safe Focus Group report and my reports from the Forest Committee and Friends of Fiscalini Ranch will address at least forest health, which is obviously an important part of fire. So I don't see anyone else's hand up. Haley, do we have any other requests for public comment? Oh, Tony Church has his hand up. Go ahead, Tony.
Tony, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Good afternoon. Question or
good afternoon, Tony.
The request. Now that the fire department is not reporting on the servicing of the fire hydrants, it's been passed across to the water board. It would be interesting to see where we stand with regard to the servicing of the hydrants in the report. I have no idea where we stand now, but with all the fires about us, I would like to know that we are on top of it. That's it.
Usually we don't do this, but Chief, I know it seems like I think you might still be in attendance. Would you like to make a comment to Mr. Church?
I can't respond to that. Yes, we have turned that responsibility back over to the water department where it initially lied. I know that they are actively out working on it. I have had discussions with Jim Green and Ray, the utilities manager, and know that that is a priority for them. How and where that is being reported, I cannot speak to, but I know that that was the intent, that they wanted to be able to bring that information towards for the community. But I do know that it is being done when they have time, and they were making some good progress on it.
All right, Chief. Thank you so much. I don't see anyone out there in the viewing audience and the public raising their hands. So apparently, there's no further call for public comment. So let us move forward to the consent agenda. Anyone have anything that they want to comment on the consent agenda? Well, seeing no one, I'm just going to briefly, yes.
Oh, I was just going to move approval of the consent agenda, item A, B, and C.
All righty. I just want to make a brief comment that the amount of money spent in August on the sustainable water facility, not one of the higher numbers, but still it's about $17,500, and about $13,500 of that was biological monitoring and reporting from May to July. So we have a motion to approve the consent agenda. Do we have a second? I think somebody might have already done that.
I'll second that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much, David. So Haley, just go ahead and do a roll call, please.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. So moving forward to six regular business and 6A, and let's turn this over to General Manager Weigel.
Yes, thanks, President Farmer. Agenda item 6A is discussion regarding modifications to CCSD Municipal Code 8.04.100 regarding street frontage required for transfer of positions. Staff's recommending that the Board of Directors discuss changes to the CCSD Municipal Code Section 8.04.100 as recommended by the Policy Committee regarding street frontage requirements for transfer of positions. And I'll turn that over to Director Howell if he has anything additional for introduction.
Really nothing much more to say. It's fairly straightforward. We are doing what we think is simply correcting an oversight in the existing code. So, but leave it up to your judgment as to whether that's the case. So it's fairly straightforward, but I can certainly answer any questions. It has been a problem in the past, which is why this is brought forward.
Director Rice, you have a question or a comment of Director Howell?
Just a quick question. I don't remember the board sending this to the policy committee, but my memory has not been what it used to be these days. So I just wanted to check about the origins of this. And then following that, I'm interested to hear what Mr. Carmel says about actually changing the municipal code and whether that would be something that would be an action today or further actions will be required. So first, the one for you, Don, about the origination.
Oh, yeah. This is actually had come to the board more than a year ago. It was brought by a member of the public, originally wrote letters to all of the board and specifically to me. This particular issue has been brought to the board, not only to me, but to a prior board. And it just continually fell on the floor. When I brought it, I'd have to go back. It's more than a year ago. At that point, I was instructed to go ahead and have the policy committee deal with it, because I had brought the letter to the attention of the board at that point. So it's something that's been kind of boiling or bubbling on the side burner for about two years, maybe. Does that help?
Vice President Steidel, you wish to make a comment?
I had a second part of my question for Mr. Carmel. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, President Farmer.
That's excuse me. No, it's my oversight. Yes, Mr. Carmel, you wish to comment or give an answer to Amanda?
Yes. Thank you, President Farmer. Changing the code would require an ordinance, so it would have to be a separate item. You could add it here, provide direction here, or you could do that at future agenda items. The ordinance requires two readings, as you know.
Thank you for that.
So I don't know if I understood you correctly there, Mr. Carmel. You say we could do that today?
No, you could not do that today. That will require a separate agenda item on a different agenda. It's a two-step process. You introduce and then you adopt.
Okay. I think I'll contact Director Howell afterward so he can remind me to put this on the agenda for October. So thank you. Vice President, yes, Director.
I have Pearson. Some questions.
I saw David just put his hand up real quick, but let me go to Vice President Steidel since she had her hand up earlier. Excuse me.
Well, I just needed to understand. I needed to understand the logistics of this a little bit, and I had a couple of questions. And one was that I actually, similar to Director Rice's question, whether this had been vetted for legal for potential issues. Another thing that I'm curious about is that this is talking to clarify the wording, discouraging water and sewer service on undersized parcels. And I'm just curious, is there, and perhaps Director Weigold or could be answered, do we have any single 25-foot lots on the water wait list? Or is there someone who could address that would know the answer offhand?
I think we'd have to do a little more research on that, Vice President Steidel.
Okay, because I have to assume that the only way that this, you know, could happen again is if we had a single 25-foot lot on the water wait list. The other thing that I found, I was trying to understand is, okay, I understand that the limitation here in the existing talks to the size, the square foot area of the lot. But if, for instance, you had someone who had two 25-foot lots that happened to be back-to-back lots, but there's some square footage was equivalent to a 50 by 75 foot lot. I don't know what the implication is legally on us precluding their being able to do something with that property, particularly if they combine the APNs. Because now you have a single lot whose square footage is matched to the configuration that we say you can build on. And there isn't anything, I believe, in the county requirements that says that it couldn't be built on. So I can see that as a potential legal constraint for us, or that it would have the blowback of a potential lawsuit. So I'd kind of like to get some information on that. And maybe this isn't so much the idea of contiguous as it is, you know, indicating that if you're working with a street-to-street square footage, that it be at least 3,750 square feet so that it would match to the requirements of what a 50 by 75 foot lot would be and doesn't have anything to do with contiguous.
All right, Vice President Steidel, we have a couple of other directors that would wish to make a comment. And we have two people in the audience wish to do so as well. So let me go to the two members of the board, and then we'll go to the folks that wish to make public comment on this item. So Director Rice, you had another comment or question?
Well, I was just going to respond to Vice President Steidel. This isn't just people on the wait list, because this is about transfer of a position from another place in town, mm-hmm. I think, which is different than the people that are on the wait list in a way, but it might be the same exact, you know, the property to which that wait list position is attached might change, but so I get where you're coming from with the wait list. I also was concerned about reducing the value of the property that prior might have been able to be built upon because of the county regulations. That's a concern of mine too, because we definitely don't want to create a taking.
Would you like me to address that issue?
Please.
Yes. Those lots can still be developed. They just can't be a receiver lot in a transfer. So the position stays on that lot. They still have the ability to develop their lot. They just can't be a part of a receiver lot in a transfer. So although it may affect the value in some way, because now it can't be used in a transfer, you still have the ability to develop the lot. So I don't look at this as a takings issue.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Carmel. Yes, Director Pearson.
Well, first, this appears to be out of our jurisdiction entirely. It's a land use issue, and the county code is what would apply here, not ours. So I'm not sure we shouldn't be just striking the whole thing out of the code, but perhaps that's for another year or something in the future. But my concern is that, you know, here we are talking about prohibiting somebody from building when, you know, that's not really under our purview and stuff. So that concerns me. And being able to transfer an existing water meter to a lot that, you know, kind of meets this description, only 25 foot wide, okay, then would be prohibited. Is that what we're saying, Mr. Carmel? Is that we wouldn't allow that because of some what's currently in our code?
No, I don't think so. This just requires 50 feet of contiguous street frontage.
But I don't understand why. Is there any reasoning that we could present that would make sense? The only thing that I can think of is that the fire department and the chief reviews all of these plans for new construction, retrofit, whatever. Okay, all of these are reviewed by him to see whether he and his apparatus and people can get in there to fight a fire. So I think that serves the purpose of making sure that there's enough lot space after the person designs their house. And the county has rules about how close you can be to the property line also. So I'm not sure that we should be delving into this at all, to tell you the truth. So just my opinion.
Thank you, David. Don, if you want to make a quick comment, and then I do want to go to the folks out there in the public audience. Sir.
Certainly. Yes, just as a reminder, this is only to do with transfer of position, nothing more than that. And to address the reason that the committee felt that the contiguous was actually an oversight is based upon the following language, which is in the code now. If you look at it'll be A, number one, findings and policy objectives. And let me read it to you. Discouraging water and sewer service on underside parcels, being parcels less than 3,500 square feet of area, unless such parcel has two underlying lots and has at least 50 feet of street frontage. That was the original language. This promotes conservation of scarce water resources and promotes the ability of the district to provide adequate sewer service to existing users. So it's already in the code that is the intention of the district to discourage and to try to limit the development on what would now, these lots that are the original Cambria subdivision would never pass today. You cannot get a 25-foot lot in a new subdivision today. So the problem is we have in this town nearly almost 100 years old subdivision with rules that are no longer applicable. And I would also remind you that the county setback for the 25-foot lots is on the side yard is 3 feet, is the last time I checked. Try to get a fire engine through a 6-foot between two buildings and see how easy that is. So it's my belief that the board that originally put this wording together had the intention to try to encourage the combining of these substandard lots into what would be a more permissible lot today. So I think it's fully within the intent of the existing code. And it was our feeling that the issue of 50 feet was really intended to be contiguous. I don't see anything in this code that suggests that it was the intention of the former board to allow 25 to in fact even encourage the development of 25 foot lots, no matter how long they are. So that's my take on that. What I understand, Mr. Carmel, and then I'll shut up. What I understand is that the procedure today would be the board, if it approves of this, would direct staff to formulate a ordinance, which would then come to us. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So the question today is whether to instruct staff to craft such an ordinance, if I understand correctly. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Director Howell. Vice President Seidel, I know you have your hand up, but I've kind of promised the folks out there and wishing to make public comment to connect.
I'd like to continue board discussion.
Okay, go right ahead.
And I just wanted to talk to what you had pointed out, Director Howell, because the specific piece to that is that there are two underlying parcels, which could be one if the APNs were combined. But the other specific was that it's an undersized lot of 3,500 square feet. But what if the combined footage of the two properties in that underlying lot or lots is 3,750, which is the legal equivalent of the 75 by 50 lots, which is a double lot in this town, which can be built on. So how does the contiguous offset that impact? What you're doing is negating a form that is allowed for building in other areas of Cambria. And I don't know that I just see lawsuit implications with it.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you, Vice President Steidel. Let me go to the public right now. I know they've been waiting patiently. We have two people with their hands up, Tina Dickerson, and followed by Jim Beringer. So go ahead, Tina.
Thank you, President Farmer. As happens so many times in these board meetings, something comes up on your agenda, and there are many questions that have to be asked by enough for all of most of your directors that you don't have enough information on to make a decision. Here we go again. You're not even sure of how many 25-foot frontage lots there are on the water wait list. You're trying to make decisions based on facts that you don't have. And I think that why should you talk about every meeting, we've got to get through, we've got to hurry up because we're taking so long. Well, guess what? You're the ones that take most of the time. And we, the public, three of us got excluded from public comment last meeting. I don't get it. I mean, if you don't have the facts, and if you're going to argue this or that 25 versus 50 feet of frontage, you should have this already before you bring it before us. Stop bringing things to us that you have not researched properly. I'm sick and tired of these long and useless discussions unless you can get it right prior to bringing it to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickerson. Mr. Beringer.
Yes, thank you. Interesting discussion. The TDC program has been a successful countywide program intended to reduce the undersized lots available for development. Adding the word contiguous may be counterproductive. A case in point, a project now under construction on Nottingham is well within the planning department's permit guidelines, yet it would not have qualified as a set of receiver lots. The lot is over 5,600 square feet, with street frontage on Nottingham is 40 feet, with another 40 feet on Windsor, fully 80 feet, but not contiguous. Also, there may be numerous street-to-street double lots that unwillingly may not be eligible for retirement. 25-foot lots are not buildable. A double set of 25 lots can be built, according to the county. Declaring an arbitrary number of lots unfit to receive water service may involve the CCSD in a claim of condemnation or taking of property. I agree with a legal counsel, even though the lot with a position isn't hurt, but I disagree in that the potential receiver lot owner would be injured by not being able to receive those water service. Perhaps the best approach would be to confer with the county folks involved in the TDC program prior to making modifications. Survey consistent lot owners affected, or just leave it go at that. The LCP, by the way, is silent on the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barringer. So moving forward, I don't see any members of the board or the public wishing to comment. So this is mainly a discussion, but there's been suggestion, obviously, that we bring this item back with far more information that is needed, and perhaps so we can address it more fully at that time. We have two members of the board that wish to comment. So Director Rice, go right ahead.
First, I just want to assure the public that this is not something that's going to be changed today. This is the part where we are bringing it to the public to let them know what we're doing. If any members of the public would like us to bring something to them that is perfect and already figured out prior to the public meeting, that might indicate that we had meetings that didn't involve the public. So we're very, very early in this process, and if we continue to move forward on it, this is part of a public process that is going to include, if we decide we want to make the change, it's going to include at least two more meetings, because we have to have the introduction and then 30 days, I believe, and then we could pass it if we wanted to do that. I think a better thing to do at this point, if what we're trying to do is protect the water supply for current residents, would be to say no transfers of position right now, and just halt them all at the moment and get all our ducks in a row, so that when we are ready and we do say that we have enough water for whatever, from whatever sources are determined at that point, then we lift the moratorium on transfers of position in addition to the moratorium on new connections. And all of that seems to me would be entirely premature at this point. I also think that our code should match what it says in the North Coast Area Plan. And unless the North Coast Area Plan says lot size 3,500 square feet and contiguous 50-foot frontage, then I don't think that we should be saying contiguous 50-foot frontage. I think we need to, when it comes to determining which lots will be built, that's on the county, which means that if it's a lot right now that can be built on based on the definitions in the North Coast Area Plan and the general plan for the county, then that's what we should be saying is a buildable lot. Because if we eliminate buildable lots by changing our code with a single word, we could end up in a liability situation with a lot of money on the line for everybody involved.
All right, thank you, Director Rice. Director Howland and Vice President Steidel.
I'd like to hear from Chief Hollingsworth regarding the issue of developing properties on on 25-foot lots in regard to the side yard setbacks. How does he feel about allowing or encouraging additional development on these substandard lots in terms of fire safety? May I hear from him, please?
Director Howe, I'm going to have to apologize. I was attending to something just outside the door. I didn't hear all of what you just asked.
the issue has to do, and I think you're familiar with the property that's raised this, which is down on Windsor. It's a development of street to street, two 25-foot lots. The issue here is it was our understanding that the district wished to discourage development on these lots if possible. So the question to you is, if we continue with allowing, say, a street-to-street 25-foot lot, what does that do in terms of the side yard setbacks and in terms of your ability to fight fires in that neighborhood if we did allow this practice to continue?
What you're asking is really a building and planning-related issue. When we do fire plan review, we're making sure that when an application has come through, that the restrictions and covenants we put on it secondary to the adopted fire code and WUI, Wildland Urban Interface Code, that anything is built to that current and highest level standard. So it's not necessarily up to me to tell somebody they can't do something. It's up to me and the department to tell them, if you're going to do it and it's allowable, you have to do it with the following restrictions to make it safe. That being said, if you're asking just the philosophical question that if you start doing this and enabling that kind of building and you're packing more houses in that area, it does potentially create more of a fire hazard, even when they have the legal setbacks, because of proximity from one building to another. And through radiant heat, if one building were to catch on fire, it does potentially create a threat to the neighboring building and does alter our mode of fire attack or defensive strategy to make sure that we provide certain kinds of water curtains and different approaches to try to protect the neighboring properties. Obviously, the more distance we could put between the buildings, you create a safer built environment. But there are legal restrictions and covenants through the county where they are allowed to build up to a certain setback. And that may encroach upon where my comfort level is, or that of the fire code or even other people in the community, but it is still within the legal category. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but that's probably the best way I can say that.
Thank you.
Vice President Steidel, you wish to make another comment?
Well, I do appreciate that feedback from Chief Hollingsworth, because he really has separated the two questions. You know, one is what people's own preferences are in terms of the construct of Cambria versus what potential legal implications exist for the way that we have to operate within the county and the constraints of legal documents. So I appreciate the fact that people have concerns, and I acknowledge them and I understand completely, but we have to balance that against understanding very well if we have any kind of legal implications or potential challenges for taking a position that would create not allowing someone to build and put under other legal constraints they are.
All right, Director Pearson, you wish to say something?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to get this moving along, to go ahead and return this to the policy committee and ask them to do two things for us. One is to try to discern whether there are any 25-foot lots left in Cambria that would meet this situation. If they can. I'm not sure that they can. And you've got to look at all the lots, Don, because they're talking about receiver lots. They're not talking about waitlist lots, right?
Right.
And second is, I would like somebody to contact the county, whether that is General Manager Weigold or who it is, to find out about whether our changing this contiguous is in concurrence with their current rules and regulations code that they have established. for building and bring that back to us at the next available meeting so that we may consider this item again.
Thank you very much, Director Pearson. Director Rice, did you wish to... Well, Director Rice, let me let you speak first.
Is there a second to his motion?
Well, it could be you.
Oh, Cindy.
Okay, so Cindy seconded. My position on this is it is out of order in priority of the things we need to be paying attention to right now. Policy Committee's table is already heavy with lots and lots of things to do. I don't see the imminent threat to anybody who might either build or move a position from one lot to another, since we are not allowing new connections right now anyway. Transfer of position might include, correct me if I'm wrong, does a transfer of position include an active meter or only the only? So it can include, so you could do a tear down and then move it. That would be a transfer of position. I'm seeing Mr. Carmel nod his head, which is why I'm continuing with this. So I don't know how often we are facing this issue, which is why I suggest that, one, we have lots and lots of things on our plate already to do. Two, I don't think the timing is right on this particular one. And if there's a certain property that we're trying to address, then we shouldn't be looking at it at all if there's a specific single property that we want to address with a policy or a change to the ordinance. That's my position. I think it should be tabled to a further time. I don't think the priority level is very high, but that's me.
All right, General Manager Weigel, you wish to make a comment, and then Director Howell as well.
Yes, President Farmer, just in follow-up to Director Rice's comment, I just wanted to let the board know that to determine whether there are other 25-foot lots is going to require the staff to go parcel by parcel. It's a very significant amount of time to do that. We're happy to do that, but just wanted to advise you of staff requirement there.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Weigold. Director Howell, Don, go right ahead.
Okay. First of all, we're only really concerned about 25-foot lots that are street to street. Otherwise, they're too small, unless they're super deep. So we're not, and we are talking about not only transfer of potential positions, but we're definitely talking about teardowns and moving exact active meters. I suggest that I can see that this is not a simple matter. I do tend to follow with Mr. Carmel's analysis that it doesn't look like it's a taking necessarily. However, I do see the need perhaps for more research in terms of determining what the overall effect of what seemingly innocuous change would be. So I think that is a legitimate concern that the board has. So I would like, agree with Director Pearson's motion, but I would like to add either an amendment or a subordinate motion that during this period that the board is reviewing this issue, that no further transfers be allowed without coming to the board first so that we can review them as they come forward. So that it's, there is no, the damage, the property that caused this to come forward to us originally already has a house on it. This is not an issue directed to any specific property, but merely to be sure that the intent of this code, which of course now we're having to discern what the intent of long absent board members may have been, but we're dealing with what the intent of our code is versus in addition what the county code is. So I do think it's probably worthy of more, but I would like to attach amendment to this motion that further transfers, would that be right? It's not transfers of position specifically, this we're talking about teardowns, where transfers of active meters, that further transfers of active meters be reviewed by the board rather than be just ministerially approved until such time as the board has addressed this issue. So I would like to make that amendment.
Thank you. We have a couple of board members that wish to speak. I just want to connect with Haley. Haley, are you being able to record some of the comments that are being made here? I mean, the folks are talking rather quickly earlier on and right now. How are you doing?
I do have the motions recorded the best that I could.
All right. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Vice President Steidel and Director Pearson.
I'm kind of flummoxed about how this has progressed from reviewing something that was in the policy committee that was just supposed to be operating in an advisory capacity on something. And now it's evolved to the concept of putting out a recommendation of not allowing an entire, you know, and it's, this thing is just morphed into something else. And frankly, I would be just as happy to withdraw my second on the motion if that were possible, because I just think that this thing is way out of hand. And if anything, I would only vote to table it, and that is it. We can't.
Director Pearson, I think
staff.
I'll withdraw my motion.
That kind of time. That's ridiculous. Yeah. The staff has all kinds of things that it needs to be working on actively for the community. And the idea of having to make that happen to me is just irresponsibility. And I don't think that it should happen.
Yeah, I will go ahead and withdraw my motion. And I will make a motion to table this item can come back at some time in the future. But I agree, there's no reason to have the staff do all of that work for probably no reason. And address Director Howell's comment about no approval of active meters. I think that's part of the code too. And we have to actually change the code to get that done. Wouldn't we, Mr. Carmel? He's shaking his head yes. So we can't really do that today either. So I would just vote to, my motion now is to table this for the future. Thank you.
I would second that.
All right. We still have a couple of comments from directors here before we act on that. So, Don, you wish to make a comment, further comment?
Yeah, there's an assumption, an underlying, an underlying assumption here. And I just want to make sure that people understand nothing I have said has indicated that anybody is wanting to take staff time on this. Nothing I said. So if you heard that, you heard wrong. Okay, so this is not an issue of taking staff time. And this is something that was sent to the policy committee by previous boards. And if you want me to, I will find you chapter and verse where that happened. This is not the policy committee running wild or taking the bit in its teeth. So we are doing exactly what we've been asked to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Howell. Director Rice?
I'm good with tabling this, but I think that it might be helpful to have something come back, because procedurally, I think it is a good idea to have the board, especially since we've been in a moratorium for 6,895 days. Thank you, Mr. Ballou. And we will need to, we should be looking at any new connection, even if it's from a teardown existing. So transfer of positions. And I don't know if this is something that we could implement to change the process to have the board inserted at some point, even just as an informational point that there's a transfer. I know we do get reports. We used to get reports that said how many transfer of positions were done in a certain month. But it might be the case that if the board is concerned about this kind of thing. If a property were to say only have 25 foot frontage, but it was 50 feet total, but on two different streets, not contiguous, if it was coming before the board, then the board could make that case by case on these few lots that might exist out there where this would apply. And that might resolve some of the concern. It doesn't obviously fix it as hard as an ordinance change would, but it's just a thought.
Thank you, Director Rice. Any other comments from members of the board before we move on? And we'll just send this back to General Manager Weigold and Vice President Seidel and myself to determine when this will come forward as a future agenda item with more adequate information for further discussion. So, Director Howell.
I'm wondering if Director Rice would like to make a motion to do what C is suggesting. I'm definitely in favor of that. If there's a possibility of a motion, I'd sure like to hear it.
Would that be outside of the description that's on the agenda today if we were to do that versus giving kind of an idea to the GM what it is that we're looking at? Or do we want to, I mean, I'm not sure how I would craft such a motion. I'm hearing a lot of agreement, but I'm not sure how I would craft such a motion.
And I do think that we have an agenda on or a motion on the table that is specific to the agenda item.
Yeah, let's vote on that first.
Agreed.
Excuse me, I thought that was withdrawn.
Director Pearson made another motion and I seconded it.
Got it, okay.
All right, Haley, do you have that second motion before you?
I do. Would you like me to read it?
So since we have the motion and a second, go ahead and read it and we'll vote on it.
Director Pearson moved to table this item and bring it back to a future meeting. And Vice President Seidel seconded the motion.
All right. Thank you. So go ahead and call the roll, please.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Howe?
No.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. All right. Thank you. So the motion passes 4-1. We move on now to item number 7 in the manager's report and General Manager Weigold.
Thank you, President Farmer. I'll keep my remarks short in the interest of time for all the other reports. We're moving along with the PG&E IGA as we're getting more complete bids. And the two ad hoc committees from the Finance and Infrastructure Committee continue to work in conjunction to find financing options. We're also working with PG&E to find third-party financing options as well to consider alongside some of the more traditional infrastructure grant and loan programs that are available. Want to draw attention to Mission Country Disposal, who's struggling with their own COVID issues, as Jeff Claren had alluded to earlier. As part of that, the September cleanup has been canceled here for September. And in place of Carlos this week, a couple of notes on the facilities. First off, the homeless situation, as I've mentioned before in previous meetings, is really continuing to grow in the CCSD district area and through town. We had two cleanups last week, one of which was at the Pocket Park, and just those two cleanups alone cost us 46% of our annual budget. So while providing services for the homeless is a good thing in my view, there's also a cost to that. And so wanted to point that out to the board. Also, we have reopened our public restrooms removed our portable porta-johns as well. Tourist flow through the Fiscalini Ranch has started to diminish as the tourist season starts to wind down a little bit and as school programs are reopening. Also, our weed abatement program is now complete. As mentioned last week's meeting, our skate park research and discussions are ongoing. We took three sides of the fence down there at the skate park because those were rented and with nothing really to guard except a slab of concrete. It didn't make sense to keep paying for a fence to guard nothing. So I directed the facility staff to take that down. Pending your questions, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Chairman Rancho Weigold. Any members of the board or anyone in attendance? I see two folks in attendance that wish to ask you or make a comment as well. So Christine Heinrich, followed by Tina Dickinson.
Thank you. The general manager notes that Hadian and Satimi new construction permit applications are under review and in process. These should have been denied outright. The district is required to uphold the law, which is the building moratorium. Instead, the general manager finds ways to evade the district's responsibility. That defers it ultimately to the Coastal Commission, which has already denied the Hadian permit once. Hadian claims a grandfathered meter. This new application is essentially identical to the one that the Coastal Commission reviewed and unanimously denied last year. Coastal Commission staff member Brian O'Neill has told the county and the applicant that this application will likely face the same denial. The district should deny this permit, thus avoiding the time, effort, and expense of carrying it through the process again. I have included the full Hadian decision for the board to read in its entirety, but I call your attention to page 10, where it goes into the details. The moratorium, which remains in effect today, and the applicable LCP provisions only allow new water service to the handful of then proposed projects that were before the county back then. It wasn't due to any finding that they would not lead to harm to the existing water supply, which they would. It was a matter of fairness because the projects had already gone that far in the planning. There were originally 64 of these grandfathered projects, but no more grandfathered pipeline projects remain. The ongoing impacts to the creeks are inconsistent with the terms and conditions of CCSD's water extraction licenses, and allowing new water service in that context cannot be allowed. The Satimi permit has been appealed to the full commission by two commissioners as well as myself. I provide their statement in its entirety to the board as well, in which they also say that this is not a pipeline project either. Relevant to the board's earlier discussion of meter exchanges, the meter the applicant claims is part of a transfer process. The commission has told the county more than once that it does not condone. Retrofits and offsetting also can't be used to allow new construction. I ask the board to direct the general manager to stop approving new construction permits that violate the building moratorium, no matter what evasion he and legal counsel construct for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrich. Tina Dickinson.
Thank you, President Farmer. First of all, the general manager gets to speak to us, the public, once a month. I resent the fact that his report is very limited in scope and in detail. We deserve better and more than that. There's a whole lot going on behind the scenes that the public is paying for and is interested in. First of all, then, I would like to address the scope of work that was sent to the Coastal Commission and other agencies at least 2, maybe 3 weeks ago. We have not learned of that from the general manager. We have not learned if there's a response from Coastal Commission, and or any other agencies. We have not learned if work is ongoing at this present time by the district in the in-stream flow study that has been requested for the last 19 years. From the Coastal Commission, can the general manager please bring us up to date on what is staring us in the face as far as the hold, the 9-page hold from county, and what the district has done so far in addressing the remaining 87% of their requirements on the application for the CDP, the regular CDP. Thank you.
President Farmer, I also comment to read.
Okay, let me just comment on what Ms. Sixon just had to say. Hopefully, Utilities Manager, Mr. D'Enzo, will be able to respond to some of your concerns. So, yes, go right ahead, Haley.
Okay, the written comment is from Janine Jacobs, and it states, "Hello, I've been a resident of Cambria for 30 years and have attended meetings more so in the years leading up to the installation of the SWF-EWS, not sure. I know there are issues from the Unlock group to expand the building allowances in the master plan. I remember Amanda suggesting 13 new homes a year at an NCAC meeting, yet this was dependent on available water. There were reactions to this as one large home was in line for building, which was understood to further pressure the town's concerns for water levels during the summer especially. The SWF needs to include plans to take out the intake pipe and replace with another pipe when encrusted with calcium or salt, as acid is not a sustainable solution for the tide pools, fish, and sea vegetation or mammals that live in that habitat. There could be a hammering upon the pipes or maybe trying ultrasound to break congestion used with kidney stones, I'm told. The oceans have become acidic enough. As far as building permits go, the general manager, Weigel, would be remiss in even broaching legal impasses to approve building permits without a resource for additional water beyond the town's present needs, fire suppression should we need that, and laundry and car wash businesses, motels, and restaurants. It would be wonderful to develop a community garden on the East Ranch or east of the holding pond, but that requires water. New permits should go through the board also and be transparent for the public as well. Any new permits, if ever approved after our EWS's license, needs to include a gray water system near the toilets, tubs, showers, and laundry structures. I suppose that is the trend these days. Respectfully, Janine Jacobs."
All right, thank you so much, Haley. Seeing no further comment on Mr. Weigold's report, general manager's report, let's move on to item 8B and the finance committee's report. No, excuse me, the finance manager's report and 7B. And Ms. Duffield, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, President Farmer, members of the board. I just have a couple additional items to highlight for you. So since the writing of this report, we were supposed to, in regards to the upgrade of the financial system, in regards to that, we were supposed to have a data poll for all of utility billing that would have happened during the utility billing process. And what that basically is, it gives the programmers at Tyler Technologies an opportunity to look at how our current utility database is set up so that they can plan for the import of that data into the Tyler system. So this takes a consultant and a programmer to work off hours, basically through the night while we're not here during business. And it has to stop, or we have to stop our utility billing process at a certain point, and this data that he collects has to be done overnight. So we have planned to do that the night of September 8th, and it would have concluded at about noon on September 9th. But due to the fires up north, he was out of power. So he was going to try to travel to another location and do the data poll in a public place, like a Starbucks or something. And I absolutely did not want to have that happen because, you know, he is getting into our server, he's getting into confidential information, and I'm like, absolutely not. So unfortunately, we had to postpone the data poll. So the next billing cycle where we would have this opportunity to pull the data again would be early November. So that is our plan at this point, but it's just a quick update to provide you that we weren't able to do the data pull, unfortunately. And hopefully that doesn't postpone our implementation date. Tyler had prepared a draft schedule of the implementation date and reviewed that during our every other week call. Director Howell was involved in that call, and we had a quite extensive detail of all the things required for implementation. It was very overwhelming for me, just so you know, because there's a lot of steps involved and a lot of staff time. But hope we're looking right now at 6 months to 9 months for implementation. 6 months would probably be the financials, which would be accounts payable, the general ledger, payroll. And then a couple of months after that would be utility billing. So that's kind of what our rough schedule is right now. They're reworking the schedule now that we didn't do the data pull. We're not going to do it for two more months. So that might change our dates just a little bit. So that's all I know at this point. And as we get more information, I'll keep the board updated. And like I said, Director Howell's been involved in the meeting every other week. So he's at least aware of, you know, all of our trials and tribulations to get there. And then as far as the audit goes, it's progressing extremely fast. We're currently reviewing some old capital improvement projects that are in process that have been on our books for a while, and we're trying to determine, are they done, are they not done, what we're doing. So I have some research and some homework to do, and then we're hoping by like the first couple weeks of October that we have a good draft of the first review of the audit. The financial statements hopefully will be written sometime the first couple of weeks of October. So our time challenge that we're going to have is that they changed beginning in July of 2018 the rules for how we report, or how government agencies report their post-employment benefit liability change. And so we're required to go with an outside consultant as there's a certain vendor through CSDA that our auditor preferred us to reach out to provide this service. So they are on an 8-week turnaround. So, you know, our stumbling point to get the audit done will be awaiting that data, because that data has to be received, it has to be reviewed by our auditors, and it has to be incorporated into the report before we can do a final draft. So, you know, we're hoping the mid of October that things start to come together, but at this point, we're just kind of at a guess. So we're working as fast as we possibly can. And I'll update you as I have more information. So that concludes any additional information I needed to provide, and I'm happy to answer questions that you may have.
Well, we have, I think, a couple of questions from directors. So Director Rice, followed by Director Pearson. And thank you so much, Ms. Duffield.
You're welcome.
First question, can you just say what audit year you were just talking about so that I'm...
Sorry, it's fiscal year 18-19.
Thank you, I appreciate that. And then the other question that I have is more related to payroll. With the payroll tax holiday thing that was pushed through by the president that is not mandatory and is just... temporary, are we doing that where we're or we're not doing that, where we're allowing for that 6.2% to be not taken out?
We are looking into it because it will require reprogramming of our payroll database. So we are actively looking into that.
Okay, because it's kind of a mess right now because it does have to be paid back by the end of April in 2021. You just get for 3 months that 6.2%. Or Congress might say, forgive it all. So if we don't give our folks this extra 6.2% in their checks right now, and everybody else gets it for as essentially free money because it's forgiven. So I know it's a complicated thing. I'm glad you're looking into it. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice. Director Pearson.
Yeah. I'm really concerned about the audit. And the reason is that everybody that I talk to about funding the PG&E SST wants to see that audit, and it's going to delay us. Is there any other firm besides this one with an 8-week wait list that we could use to get this other report done? Or is this the only one that does this in God's good country?
So it is the one that the auditors recommended to us, and they've been working on it already for about 3.5 weeks. So we've provided all the data to them. So it's just a matter of them going through their actuaries to produce the report to us. I think it's just a season. People are working remotely. I don't think we kind of talked, the auditor and I talked about this to see if there was any way to get a firm that would do it quicker. And he wasn't of the opinion that there was because it's audit season for everybody right now and people are working remotely. So it's just a combination of events. And I did have a short meeting with the PG&E folks today and a conference call with the general manager and some utility staff. And they are aware of our audit and that we're trying really hard to get it done. But, you know, our hands are kind of tied with the process. We have to go through the process.
All right. So
I hear you. I understand the concern.
I understand. So when these people are asking me, when would that audit be available? What kind of date should I be giving them? December?
Well, I would hope it wouldn't be that far away. I'm hoping that we can get it to the board in November, but, you know, that's just my best guess.
Okay. Well, that's all I need for now is to be able to give them some kind of an idea as to when that will be available to them. So.
Yeah. We are working. We're working diligently to get it done. The auditors were on site with us. They had three staff here on 5 different days. So they have been working very hard to get through all the things that they need to do as, you know, as part of their responsibility of the audit.
Okay. Very, very good. That's what I needed was some kind of an idea.
Reassurance. I get it.
Yeah, I know you're working as hard as you can.
Well, these days, obviously, everything is moving a little slower than one would anticipate, and everybody's working a little harder as a result. Haley just texted me, and she has a public comment. So, Haley, who would that be?
The public comment is from Holly Ludwigson.
Ludwigson. Uh-huh.
Okay. So it says, hi, Haley, if you would read this question at today's finance board meeting under item 7B, I would appreciate it. I plan to attend and be available to answer questions if needed. How long will the SWF usage fee be collected and placed in reserve? Will its balance be rolled over each year? If a catastrophe occurs with the SWF, say gophers totally destroy parts of the plant, will reserve monies be spent down to cover the catastrophe? If the SWF never returns, say an earthquake occurs and the facility is destroyed, will the SWF usage fees be reimbursed to the ratepayers? Thank you.
I don't know, Ms. Duffield, did you wish to respond to any or all of those queries there?
Sure. So the general manager has spoke to this customer. I've spoke to this customer, and Melissa Bland, our program manager in utilities, has also spoke to this customer. I've let her know that the reserves in SWF, if they are not utilized, you know, from year to year, that that would be a board's decision to determine what are done with those reserves. And so we went through some potential scenarios, you know, but again, it's the board's decision if the SWF isn't run on how those reserves would be handled. So it's not something that we can just give her a quick answer to.
All right, thank you. Director Rice, you wish to make a comment?
I was actually, I can wait until after the utilities report. I just was going to ask for a little break.
Okay, well, I was going to have one at that time before we went into closed session. So can you wait about 15 minutes? Is that going to be okay? All right, thank you. All right, seeing no further comment on Ms. Duffield's report. Thank you, Ms. Duffield. We wish you all the best in getting everything important together, especially regarding to, at some point, as quickly as possible, expediting the audit so we can move forward with any kind of loan opportunities that exist for the PG&E SST program and the upgrading of infrastructure. So moving forward to item, I believe it's 7C and the utilities report. And Mr. D'Enzo, I see you right there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, President Farmer. Thank you for the opportunity to present the utilities report for events that happened in the month of August. So please understand that there were some items that started earlier in July, went into August, and then there's some that started in August and are going into September. But so I'll try my best to summarize each effort. So let me start first with the wastewater. A couple of themes that the utilities report regarding wastewater is, number one, we are moving forward with projects, as was alluded to by General Manager Weigold. We're specifically relating to the PG&E IGA project program. We've done a lot of work as far as the surveying that needs to take place for the lift stations and the wastewater treatment plant, to establish the boundaries for design and construction. So that's happened in August. And also, we've also done a lot of work evaluating our SCADA system that happened in August. So that's continuing to move forward as SCADA, the supervisory control and data acquisition is what that means, is infiltrated throughout all of our projects within not just wastewater, but water and SWF, all inclusive. As also mentioned in the utilities report, we're moving forward with the electrical upgrades for our plant, which is a high priority for us, which I think it's the cornerstone of a lot of what's going to make all of these projects successful. The other thing that I wanted to mention relating to wastewater specifically is we're anticipating the requirements that are being handed down by the state for all public waterworks, publicly owned treatment works, where we have to start paying attention to PFAS, which is called per polyfluoroalkyl substances. In reality, there's about 5,000 of these man-made substances that are out there that are starting to show up in our water and wastewater infrastructure. So the state has mandated a lot of these plants, including ours, start monitoring for it. So just wanting to let you know that we're moving forward with that. And if there is a detection of these substances in our wastewater raw effluent and then also in our biosolids, we would have to provide some kind of a treatment plan for it. So I just wanted to let your board know that we're looking into that, and just as a heads up, a possible expense to treat these substances in our wastewater streams. The other thing that I also wanted to say is we're doing some really good progress with the cleanup, not cleanup, but the maintenance relating to not just projects moving forward, but just the needed maintenance of our aeration basins and our effluent basin. As you can see in figure one of your utilities report, we did some cleanup of aeration basin one. The previous month we did aeration basin two. And also in the month of August, we also cleaned the effluent basins, the three effluent basins. And a couple of those pictures are shown in figure two in the utilities report. So you can see that that a lot of good progress is being made for that. And as far as our collection system is concerned, we're still, something that happened in August is we needed to start preparing for possible power outages that started happening, you know, relating to the fires. And so we wanted to be ready for that. And because of that, we needed to do some musical chairs with some of our generators. Like the new generator got put into lift station B1, and then generator in B1 got put in B2. And then now we're redoing, we're refurbishing the generator B1 so that we can put it back to B1. Because the generator for B2 has been decommissioned. This is the last year that we could use it for our air quality permit. So I just wanted to let you all know about that relating to our collection system. And some good news too with our staff. We both Ben Bivens and Tristan Reaper, our recent hires for our collection system maintenance. They also got certified as their OITs, their operation and training, so that they can also help out here in our wastewater treatment plant. So that's good news. They're being able to increase in their certifications and become more of an asset to all of our treatment works here. So now moving on to water, a couple of things that I wanted to make mention. There's a lot of good preventive maintenance or preventive repairs that we started doing. We did some service line replacements over in Wellington, which was needed. That was kind of a problem street, so to speak. And instead of waiting for leaks to happen in the middle of the night, they were proactive in doing some of those repairs that they knew were a weak point. So kudos to our team for that. Also wanted to make mention too that preventive maintenance was not being ignored. All of our cathodic protections for all of our water tanks have been maintained, and so new, a lot of those were refurbished and put into good working order. So that was also done in the month of August, and including our staff is continuing to do valve exercising, which is not only is it a part of our permit, but it's also good practice, good industry practice. So because the valve exercising not only will release all that corrosion in the valves, but it'll also give opportunities for our operators to know where all those valves are just in case of emergencies, and they can tag them right away, and they can know how many turns that it takes to open and close. So all of those things. Relating to the sustainable water facility, there wasn't anything done there, and unfortunately, because of COVID, the our audit for that is the service audit, the clean and not the 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 service audit is still delayed, and we're anticipating. Again, next month, I know I said that last month, but hopefully some of the travel restrictions will be eased for that. For this next, I also wanted to make mention too, let me share my screen for this one. So I wanted to share the screen for, I know that it was, I apologize, Director, President Farmer, for not having this in the report, but I just wanted to show a screenshot for you and also for those listening regarding our well levels for the month of August. As you can see, the well levels for San Simeon Creek are trending above average. So as you can see, the slight blue line is the is currently what we have for 2020. The average is this black line down here. So we're just a little bit above that. So which is good. The minimum levels that we saw were down here, which, you know, we're far from that, and the maximum levels, you know, are up here, which we're not too far from that, but, you know, it's, I wasn't expecting that anyway. And also for Santa Rosa, we're also trending a little bit above average with that too, which as you can see here with some of our well levels. And actually, I don't have a good history to compare it with, but anyway, that's the well levels that we have for Santa Rosa Creek. And as far as, I'll turn this back off. So as far as our diversions, it's written in my utilities report. We've diverted 34 to 35% annual from the Santa Simeon Creek and Santa Rosa Creek, respectively. 78% of our production is coming from San Simeon Creek, which is to be expected. And also we've used 19 and 33% of our San Simeon and Santa Rosa dry season diversion totals, respectively. So those are some of the things I wanted to report for our well and production report. Last thing I wanted to cover is, I know you've also been curious about the CDP, the Coastal Development Permit process. And I have a little write-up also in our utilities report, but just to summarize it, is that yes, there is a hold, an information hold from the county planning department relating our permit, but it was to be expected. The application was, the project description was submitted, and it allowed us to be able to give the county, give us a set standard of review for the entire project, which is a very positive thing. So now we have clear expectations of what is required of us, you know, for regarding follow-up studies. That's going to be consistent with the local coastal program. So relating to that, we are wanting to update our model, our groundwater model, and also do the in-stream flow study, which the status of that at the moment is it is in review with the Coastal Commission and with state parks, and also in coordination with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. So those main agencies are involved relating to the review of that scope of work of the in-stream flow study. So I haven't heard back from them. I was told from Coastal Commission that I was going to receive a response from them next week. So hopefully in the next report, I'll have a little bit better, more detail to share with you. But I'm not withholding anything on that. That's what I got, and we're moving forward. And as far as data collection with our management plan, the AMP, we're still continuing to do those monitoring, the adaptive management program. We're still continuing to do that. So it's not like we are collecting data relating to streams, and so it's not like work is being neglected. There's a lot of work that's being done that will eventually populate the in-stream flow study and this groundwater model. And I can also answer any questions for that if there's any follow-up for that. Last couple of things, the assignments of the will and will serves and intent to serve extensions are also listed there with a little bit of a little bit of a descriptor of what it means. And as far as regulatory permit or regulatory reports, they were all submitted and there are no reports of violation. So that's my report. And I, of course, am open for questions.
All right. Senator Manager Weigold wishes to make a comment. We have two members of the public who wish to make comments as well. And I'll go to them after you, Senator Manager Weigold.
Thanks, President Farmer. I just wanted to make an overall comment about the Utilities Department and a bravo Zulu to Ray. Ray is a fairly junior in his experience in managing, but he's come into this district, which is extremely difficult to recruit to. He's catching up on all past maintenance. He's doing things forward-looking. He's increased the morale of the department. He has taken on both the CDP and the PG&E IGA program, each of which could be considered a full-time job. And he's doing all of this simultaneously. I just want to let the board know we're extremely lucky to have this guy on board. He is forward-looking, using new technology, and he's doing a phenomenal job. I just did his probationary review. I have nothing but great things to say about the job he's doing inside the Lifelines. Thank you.
Thank you, General Manager Weigold. Vice President Steidel, I'll let you make a brief comment, and then I'll go to the public.
Thank you, President Farmer. Actually, I'm probably going to echo what General Manager Weigold has just laid out. I wanted to take the opportunity to commend not only Mr. Danzo, but his staff, because the utility staff have not only been working actively addressing the maintenance and the operations issue and being proactive in addressing potential difficulties, such as that new lay of pipe, to be proactive in addressing that. But they're doing it in a frontline environment in COVID. They're getting up every day. They're going out and doing their things in the community. They're balancing all of that. And I think that they probably are demonstrating more active, you know, commitment to the district than just about anybody I can think of, the going out and hitting the streets the way they have to and being involved in the things that they're doing. And I also wanted to thank you, Mr. Danzo and Ms. Bland, for providing some more specific information and the categorizations of the assignments, will serves and intent to serve actions. It's given more visibility, I think, into defining what those things are. And I also appreciate the fact that we've been seeing a continuation of the timely and complete regulatory report. So I wanted to add my thanks to what had already been expressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. Let me go to the public now. We have two people that wish to speak. The first would be Tina Dickinson.
Thank you, President Farmer. Thank you also, Mr. Danzo, for your report. You seem to have covered some of the questions that I was asking. However, when President Farmer began the meeting, he was talking about expenditures for the SWF, and he mentioned over $13,000 for biology work. And one of my questions for you was, have you actually begun in-stream flow study work prior to getting a response from Mr. Lusser and possibly state parks? I do know, and I have I requested the scope of work that was sent to them, and I had it for some time, so I am aware of what you sent in your report and how you stated it. I am concerned that there is not oversight, that you do not wish to have oversight when the in-stream flow study is being conducted. That really, really bothers me, and I hope that will be reviewed and rethought. And so that's one area. I also noticed a lot of work was done around the evaporation pond, like cleaning up of weeds. And it looked, when I was out there the other day at a ranch, I noticed how much nicer everything looked. Also a lot of weeds along all along the district's property on the south side had been cleaned up. Not sure, and also at the wastewater treatment plant, there are piles of wood chips. I'm assuming that those are all going to be, you know, for landscaping and to make that look a lot nicer, but maybe for other reasons as well, or maybe we have a special person coming out to visit and we want to make a good impression. So I'm not quite sure, because I noticed in the past that's exactly what happens. It all gets spruced up when we have a consultant or somebody coming to visit our facilities. So that. But I, most of all, I want to know, have you begun any work on the in-stream flow study? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. D'Angelo, before I go to another member of the public, did you wish to answer Ms. Dickinson's question with regard to the in-stream flow study, whether it's been begun yet?
Yes. Thank you for that. And as far as, let me answer some of the easier questions first. As far as the wood chips that you're seeing, that's compliments of our facilities and resources department. They did a lot of, they did some tree trimming, and then they gave us the wood chips to be used for our, you know, just in the regular landscaping outside of our plant. And no special dignitaries coming, but we are always wanting our public to see a really nice wastewater treatment plant. So, and it has a nice smell to it too, which I don't really need to tell you that that's important for us here. But as far as work on the in-stream flow study, what we need to remember is that data that is yet to be collected is part of the data that's being collected for the in-stream flow study. The other thing, the other portion too of the in-stream flow study is historical data that needs to be compiled, you know, whether it's studies from previous years or even decades, but also data that's been collected from a few years back. The consultant that we hope to hire, and you know, I don't want to give too much away because I don't know if Coastal is going to go along with the plan, is that there is a short-term component and a long-term component. And the data that's being collected now is for the adapted management plan. But note that the in-stream flow study will eventually feed into the adaptive management plan. And so it's kind of like the, right now we're doing a lot of the work from our certified biologists that's collecting the data at the moment, really good data for that's going to be needed. Our biologist is trained through CDFW type of process programs that are consistent with their processes, their technical processes, that's going to feed into the data that we're going to provide when we eventually move forward with a formal in-stream flow study report. So just like with anything, you know, when we hire a consultant for the urban water management plan, we give them historical data that we've collected. We don't ask them to collect it. We're collecting that data for them, and it's up to us to give it to them. So the analogy works here too. We're collecting this data. It's part of our, the adaptive management plan was part of the subsequent environmental impact report that we needed to do. So we're doing it. And so we're populating it with really good data that we're going to supply to whoever we eventually hire to do the short-term and long-term in-stream flow study. So, so I guess the answer is yes and no. I mean, we don't have an official in-stream flow study formalized yet, but we are moving in that direction, and we're gathering the data in view of populating the in-stream flow study. So anyway, that's the answer to that. And I think, I don't remember there was a third question in there, but that's my my answer.
All right, thank you, Mr. D'Anzo. So one more member of the public wishes to speak. And I think once we finish with the utilities report, I know Director Rice requested a little bit of a break earlier, so I think we'll go to that before we go to go to reports from the board members. So Ms. Bettenhausen, go right ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I want to commend Mr. D'Anzo on the written report, especially. I think people in the community who want to understand the sewer and the water system should look at the photos every month, because it's a wonderful way of conveying reality when words sometimes just don't quite aren't quite adequate. So I want to thank you for your work in that very much, as well as the rest of the staff. My commendation, certainly, on the quality of work being done. I want to follow up, though. I'm glad that you explained it, what's happening with the in-stream flow study. I'm talking about now page 51, if you all directors want to look at that. There is a statement in there. The district is preparing to update its groundwater modeling and to initiate a proposed in-stream flow study, which will be scoped within that standard of review. My questions are, what is involved in the update of the groundwater model, and what is the standard of review that is being used? I'm simply quoting your phrases. I know that you've sent a draft now, that's not in the report here, but in response to the excellent questions from Ms. Dickerson, you've sent a report to the Coastal Commission, to State Parks, and to Fish and Wildlife. I would really be a wonderful, wonderfully happy ratepayer were it possible for us as the payers of all this stuff to see such a proposal, but I understand this is not quite possible yet. But so I'm curious about that particular paragraph. It sounds familiar because remember, we're down to approximately 85 bottles of beer in my little metaphor. But I do have another major question that I want to pose about utilities to the board. And I'm going to be sending you this in writing. And it has to do with the monthly reports of the daily production in the CCSD. Sometimes operational issues become policy concerns. Over some months, I've been in correspondence with you, with the utilities manager, Mr. D'Anzo, regarding SR3, Santa Rosa Well 3. He informs me that a turbidity problem in SR3 is preventing it from being used to pump water to the town that's potable water. I request that a fuller report on this be presented to the board of directors in October. This should include why water from SR3 was being used so much in May to December of 2018 and then stopped in January of 2019, and any correlation with operational standing of the San Simeon wells should be included in this report. There's something odd going on here. And it might simply be turbidity, although I suspect, of course, in my little conspiracy theory of the universe following our president these days, I have all sorts of theories about all this. But I would welcome a report to the board of directors about the relationship between the condition of SR4 and SR3 on the one hand in Santa Rosa and the condition of the wells at San Simeon, especially the one that was turned off completely for months. So we need an update. And this is not simply a matter of operations, although it includes that. This is a matter of water demand and meeting that demand as a policy question in this district. So I thank you very much. You don't even need particularly to respond to that turbidity issue that I just posed. But I'd like, again, once since I always ask the question, a little more clarity about what exactly is being used to update the groundwater model and what is the standard of review being used, since you mentioned them both but do not explain them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. I think Mr. D'Anzo, as you suggested, will probably return with some of that information for you in October. Director Rice.
Thank you, President Farmer. Question. First, I'm glad General Manager Weigold and Vice President Stidell finally got on the fan train of Mr. D'Enzo, because I've been there for a while. I'm so glad that there's so much agreement, because I think he is doing a great job. The delayed audit on the SWF, does that affect the treatment plant or the consumables? Is it costing us money because they haven't been able to come out?
No, it's not costing us money at all. It was just, if the drought were, if a stage three drought were called, even, you know, today or tomorrow, our guys can get it up and running, no problem. So they're continuing to do maintenance on it, but it was more like a checkup. It's basically like a checkup of our plant and our operations. But as far as we know, like everything is working in good working order. So it's not costing us any money, and our operations are not hindered by it.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we weren't wasting filters or something because they haven't been able to come out. Okay, and then I wanted to reinforce something you said. We had to file our permit in order for us to get the list of things that the county wants. So we now have a clear list. It wasn't a surprise there were going to be things that we had not yet done. So it wasn't like a surprise that we got this letter. This is a letter that's sent out to anybody that's working on a CDP for any project, but especially a large public works project. So I just wanted to reinforce that we wouldn't have this list that we can work off of. We were just kind of wandering around without a checklist until this point. Now we have a checklist of here's what they expect us to have. And then I guess that's all that I have, in just to chime in again with thank you. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we're finally being proactive and not just everything's an emergency.
Thank you, Director Rice. Ray, if you don't mind, I just want to quickly ask you, and you may have already alluded to this and the time frame, but since you've got these 9 pages of points that were returned from the planning department, how is that moving forward with regard to a time frame of answering all their questions and concerns? Could you have any idea with regard to that?
Yeah, I think if you're concerned about like the 90-day time period, the deadline, quote unquote, that we have, I've already, you know, contacted the planning department relating to this, because they know, you know, I know, we all know that there are some of these things that might take time well after the 90-day period, but they've already said that they would grant us an extension as long as we're continuing to move forward, which we are. I've created a matrix, for example, of the work that needs to be done, just to answer some of the questions, like, for example, just like a basic thing, like we need to do a sound study, which I've looked to see if we've done one. It doesn't look like we have. So just very basic things like that. It's going to take a while. I don't want to commit to a time because there's no need to rush it per se, because I think, but I do think we're moving in a good direction for getting the permit.
All right, Ray. Thank you for answering that question. Seeing no further questions or comments from members of the audience or the folks on the board or staff, why don't we go ahead and take a 10-minute break right now. We'll come back and do board member committee and liaison reports, future agenda, and then we'll move to closed session. So let's return to this meeting at 20 minutes past 4 o'clock. Thank you so much.
Jesus.
So waiting for Vice President Seidel and Director Rice. Thank you.
I'm here.
All right. So let's move on to item 8 and Board Member Committee Liaison Reports. And I'm going to withhold my report until the end. So Vice President Seidel, if we could have a report from the Finance Committee, please.
Certainly. The Finance Committee reviewed the budget policy when there were some recommended changes. Those have been incorporated into a red line, and that'll be brought back to the Finance Committee for final review on the 22nd, and then brought forward to the board for consideration. Upcoming at our next meeting on 9/22, there'll also be a follow-on as a review from the budget for discussion of the administrative overhead or administrative allocation. And that's it for my report.
Thank you for making it brief. Director Howell, Policy Committee report, please.
Thank you. Very briefly, our next meeting will be next week, and I hope to be bringing forward from that meeting a revised mission statement, which we will recommend to the board to be included in our bylaws. We've been working on a grants policy, and I hope to bring that forward. And the issue about filling board vacancies on the board of directors, which I brought to you last time, that's coming. That will be coming back to you with hopefully some clarification. As the message I took to the policy committee on that was that the board was friendly to the idea, but was not fully understanding yet of the ranked choice voting mechanism. And so hopefully they'll be able to come up with an explanation and an example that will make that clear to you all. So those are the things that you can hopefully will be coming up at one of our meetings next month, at one of our board meetings. Future issues which are on our plate and which we're slowly working towards, the one thing of some importance, the purchasing policy, which originally we were asked to look at largely in regard to purchasing used equipment. But in the process, we discovered that we needed to, we couldn't really see where to make that modification in the existing policy. So what we have now is we've taken the existing purchasing policy verbatim and simply reformatted it and reorganized it to fit with the CSDA policy handbook method, which is what the board has instructed us to do. And that we have passed that modified but not changed, it's the same exact words, but in a different order. We have passed that back to staff for their review to make sure that what we did makes sense, and that also to assure them that we haven't changed anything material in the existing policy. Once that's been done, and so the staff has reached some, we've reached some agreement with staff on this, then we can actually address the issue about where to put in a policy about purchasing used equipment, which was our original charge on that. That, however, I suspect you're probably not going to hear from that until probably November, I suspect. I don't think we're going to be able to come back to you before then on that one. We are also still pending. There are issues regarding email management and retention that need to come back to you again, probably at least a month or 2 months out. And the issue of who or how or what kind of a policy the board needs regarding correspondence to the board, how it should, if it should, and how it should be answered. And then the other one is we had originally been asked to address, to look at our current procedures and policies regarding homeless people experiencing homelessness. The charge there is a little bit difficult to understand, but I take that as simply asking us to see, is there something that could be added or to our existing policies and procedures, which have already been worked out by Mr. Carmel and Mr. Weigold. So that's the state of affairs. And that's basically, I've given you what amounts to about at least 3 months worth of our work so far. But with any luck, we should be able to come forward and give you some substantive stuff coming over the next 3 months. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Director Howell. Thank you for that concise report. Moving on now to resources.
I have a couple questions.
I'm sorry, I overlooked you there. Go right ahead.
Sorry, I thought I had my hand.
You did. My mistake.
Okay. Are you starting from the grants policy that we already have, Director Howell, I would hope?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll wait and see what the committee comes up with. I don't know if you're going to approve it or not, but at least you'll have the input from the committee and the committee's thinking about this. But yes, the short answer is yes.
Okay. And I don't know how the other directors feel about it, but one of the things that might help give more clarity for the vacancy policy, how do you fill a vacancy? A checklist. So like, oh my gosh, we lose a director. I don't know. They got caught up with mermaids in Australia or something. So we need to appoint somebody. Now I can look and there's a list. Here's what you have to do. And, you know, staff does the noticing in the newspaper. These are the steps that the committee is suggesting. That will also help and, you know, make some subsections for the ranked choice voting that kind of walk you through the steps of how to do that. I think it would help a great deal.
Thank you. Yes, I'll definitely pass that on. You know, and as a reminder, and as I reminded the folks on the committee, these are not bylaws; these are policies. So they can be verbose. They can be as detailed as they need to be. So yes, I think a checklist, examples, something that can achieve clarity. Hopefully, we can get clarity on that. So thank you very much, and I'll definitely pass that on.
All right, thank you both. Moving forward to the Resources and Infrastructure Committee report and. Director Pearson.
Thank you. The R&I committee has not met since the last report, but we will be meeting this coming Monday. The funding ad hoc committee made progress, and we will be making loan application to 4 or 5 different agencies in the next month or so when we get all of our information together. PG&E has offered to send out an RFP for us. To likely private vendors to get offers on loans. Grant opportunities are still being pursued, but we mostly are not qualifying because of our mean salary in our town is too high to qualify for an awful lot of the grants, unfortunately. USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, is an example of that. We did not qualify for the loan, for the grant, but we will be talking to them about getting a loan. PG&E gave the staff, Vice Chair Dean, and I an update on the IGA progress. I know that President Farmer also attended. I don't know if the other directors did or not, but it was very informative, and a few items have changed, but overall the project is moving ahead towards getting us some pricing and going forward with it. I attended a short meeting with the utilities manager today about lift station B1, which is the one next to the hardware store. And I will say that I was very impressed with the fact that Ray came up with an idea of getting rid of the lift station entirely and using gravity to feed down to another lift station, which, as he said, makes it a net zero lift station, because we will never use any electricity on that one anymore, and the maintenance will mostly go away. So that was thinking outside the box by Ray, and I much appreciate that he is doing so. And that's my report for this month.
Thank you, Director Pearson. So we'll move on to liaison and ad hoc committee reports. So first, do we have any ad hoc committee reports to be given to us? Anybody? Yes, Director Pearson.
Okay. The ad hoc committee on retrofit points met. Cindy and I met with the staff, and we all agreed that the entire section really needs revision, and that that is best done when the urban water master plan is finishing up. I don't know if we want to add that as something that that consultant will help us with, or what we will do about that. But the whole section really needs revision, and that's best done when we are finishing the urban water master plan. Inspections are not being done for the most part right now because people don't want us in their homes. Can't blame them for that. But we will start up again when people start feeling safe. The staff will be doing the inspections as per the current code. And the other thing that I have a report from that is that the points database is pretty much complete with all the data that we had from the past years. And we're now waiting to hire a new engineering assistant to pick that database up and start finishing it off. So we're in good shape on that one. And that's the report from that ad hoc. Thank you. And that will
thank you, Director Pearson.
That will be our final report because we think we're finished until next spring sometime.
All right. Director Rice, did you wish to comment on Director Pearson's report?
I did, but I lost my train of thought somewhere. The section on the retrofit points, part of the 2013 water efficiency program has some analysis in there that might be, I'm sure that'll be included in what the people are looking at for the urban water management plan, but yeah. Just looking at the way that has worked in the past. That's one of the things they did in 2013 when we hired Madhouse.
Yes. Yeah. I read through that. Thank you for sending that to me. And that will certainly be part of our deliberations at that point. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Director Rice. Vice President Steidel, you wish to make a comment?
Yes, I had a report out on the ad hoc committee for the affordable housing waitlist application program. I can address this with a lot more detail and do this next month with more detail if that's appropriate. Considering that the business that we still had have ahead of ourselves with closed session. But I will say that one of the things that we did is that it probably will not be an easy remembrance, but we had a flow chart that kind of broke down the process that had the waitlist application process, and then it moved into the affordable housing needs assessment. And then the third was offering in the intent to serve process itself. And we determined that it was a smart thing to define those in stages. So the application process is stage A, the needs assessment process is stage B, and the intent to serve process is stage C. We can work towards a number of the things in terms of the stage A, and in conversation with Ms. Bland and with Mr. Danzo as part of the review yesterday, we made determinations about that. And I should say, I have to start at the beginning here. I either misspoke or didn't include the fact that the other component of this ad hoc committee is Director Howell, and I apologize for that. Don, I was trying to move through something a little too fast, I'm afraid. And that the second stage is the needs assessment and the intent to serve process. Really, a lot of that may hinge on the idea of things that we need to know relative to the water use efficiency plan and the UWMP. And so when the water use efficiency plan is available later this year, we'll go ahead and assess at that time how far forward in the process we can move for the stage B and stage C. And in the interim, we will go ahead and be working towards those things that will help more specifically define what the late wait list application process is so that we can address that part of the request and requirement that's come from the community. And that's the report, unless there are any questions.
Director Rice, you have a question?
I actually remembered the comment I wanted to make on Director Pearson's report about the retrofit inspections. First, let me say I'm glad we're keeping both our staff safe and community members safe by not doing those right now. I'm hoping we're not just saying that we're not going to ever do it. Maybe that property gets put onto a list to follow up. It just, you know, so that, okay, so we're going to do 100 Main Street. Oh, it's COVID right now, so we're going to put it on the list. And then once the restrictions are lifted and people feel safer, and we can still do those inspections. Because I think that, I mean, I don't want to let things slide because of COVID, and then we don't have a good idea of what we're actually doing in terms of our retrofits.
Yeah, the plan is to go back on every one of those and do the inspections when the restrictions are off.
Just wanted to make sure we weren't just letting it go.
Yeah, Melissa is keeping track, so we know it's going to get done.
Director Howell, I see you smiling there, so go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. On Director Steidel had prepared an excellent flow chart of the three processes. So Director Steidel, do you think it would be useful to go ahead and send that out to the board and let them?
Oh, we can certainly make it as an attachment to the agenda package for that matter, by all means. My only intent, and I have it available for Ms. Dotson to be able to put up on the screen. It's just that I was trying to move towards what I was hearing was an expectation of the board wanting to move on to special or to closed session.
So I would just encourage then the other board members to please do look at the, you'll see it in the, eventually it'll be available to you. So please take a moment to look at it. I think particularly Director Seidel did an excellent job of putting this all together and giving us a nice logical approach. So I was very pleased with the way work's been going. So I just wanted y'all to see that. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Howell. So let's move on to liaison reports. I need to apologize to Director Rice if she's still the liaison to San Simeon CSD or not.
I am not. I reported at the beginning of the year that I couldn't meet at the time that they were meeting.
All right. That's what I thought, but I was just checking in. Thank you. So let's go to Director Pearson. I know he has something from a Fire Safe Focus Group and North Coast Advisory Council. So go right ahead, David.
Thank you, President Farmer. The Fire Safe Focus Group met just last week, had a very good talk about getting the FireWise certification back and what we're going to do about that. I think that's going to happen. We had a discussion on the HIP camps, which was also a topic of discussion at the NCAC meeting. We had a good discussion on innovative ideas. The County Fire Safe Focus Council that I'm also on had two things that I think would be of interest to the community. One is if you're concerned about air quality, there are two websites you can go to. One is called Air Now EPA. And you click on the fire and smoke map, and then you can click on different areas to find out what the air quality is like in that area. Or you can go to a place called Purple Air, and the same kind of thing happens there. The second thing is that a new product is available on Amazon called FozCheck Home Defense. It's a product that was patented, discovered, whatever, here in St. Louis Obispo County. And what it is it's a gel that you spray on your plants. It doesn't harm the plants at all, and it protects them from catching on fire. It's available out on Amazon if you want to go out and check on it. It's friendly to people, friendly to pets, friendly to everything. It's POSCHEK, Home Defense. Last, we received the grant money for the traffic cones for Route 1, $5,000.
Yay!
So we are doing something about evacuation routes at the Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group. We have that and several other initiatives going on about evacuation routes. And so if Ms. Heinrichs wants to join us for a couple of meetings, she'll find out what kind of progress we're making. Moving on to the NCAC report. The recommendation that they made on the SWF permit came up again because the county said the condition requiring a cost per acre foot to be provided would not be considered because it was a water issue and not under their purview. So a vote was called on as to whether to invalidate the vote of last month, and that was denied 8-3, so their recommendation stands. San Simeon is considering ending their building moratorium at the last meeting. Mr. Gibson brought up that the Christmas market must meet county public health requirements if they're going to have the Christmas market this year. And apparently they have not yet applied for the permit to do that. So that's still up in the air as to whether that's going to happen this year or not. The camping issue came up, and Ms. Siong with the planning department did a great presentation on all of the rules and regulations surrounding camping, and I would never even think about trying to summarize that, but I'm trying to get the Zoom to be posted out on the NCDC website, and that would be a good way, if you want to hear all about that, that would be a good way to go out there and see all that stuff, but I can't go into all that here. The Haitian permit was recommended for approval to the county. There are new water board requirements that are coming down. I think they're meeting next week, that will hurt small farmers and may cause some to go out of business. That was a report from the agricultural representative. And the report from the Latino community representative is that the Latino community as a whole is still struggling because of the lack of employment there for a while. Even though many of them are reemployed, they're still trying to catch up. So we could all hope that they are able to do so. So that's my two reports. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. So I have two reports as well. I'll try to make them as brief as possible. And then the president's report. So first, the Cambria Fires Forest Committee, which met last Wednesday, a week ago Wednesday. And so once again, there was a brief discussion of the gathering, the family gathering that took place up in Leimert on Labor Day weekend. And we have no idea if something like this is going to be happening in the future or not. But obviously the main concern there is the possibility of fire. There's a report from Dan Turner of the Fire Safe Council regarding the work being done off of Burton Drive and Village Lane regarding a cleanup there, the spraying of French broom, and that the fact that CAL FIRE will be doing this on a yearly basis. There was also a discussion of the PG&E FEMA grant project regarding the removal of dead and dying trees, and also what is known as hazard trees that could fall across. This is the roadway, the area between the nursery and Schoolhouse Lane. That's up on Eaton, of course. And they'll also be removing invasives such as broom and Cape ivy and creating a defensible space around the middle school. And also, there's an investigation of getting a grant project for a treatment plan to address forest health of roughly 1,400 acres I think most of that is going to be the Covell Ranch, and using a professional registered forester to do this. And this is going to allow for the removal of living but diseased trees. And there's also a brief discussion of a forest manager task qualifications, but the person that was supposed to address that was not in attendance. With regards to the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch committee meeting, which took place a week ago tonight, they had a report from Michael Doyle of Vanguard Institutional Advisory Services that provides fiduciary oversight, and he discussed their portfolio, their long-term pool of assessments and assets, and so forth. Also, there was a discussion about the Fiscalini Ranch and looking closer at creating more diversity in the understory as it returns in good health after what took place last year as a result of Cal Fire. There was also, once again, Dan Turner of Fire Safe Council about developing, like I say, a forest management plan. That's for, once again, the Covell Ranch and property behind Fog's End. There's also hope for a forest manager plan for all of Cambria's forests, all those various areas that have different priorities. So that would be an awesome thing that would happen considering the circumstances with regard to fire. Forest health and fire safety is probably the most important things we need to address, and that's going to be moving forward. The FFRP is actually donating $20,000 to assist in the forest work. It's also been mentioned that the forest work can't take place until the nesting season is over on December 15th. So there's a short window to do forest cleanup. Also, there was a discussion about the 20th anniversary of FFRP. And obviously, we can't meet in person. They're probably going to have an online Zoom concert with musical acts, talk about the founding of the ranch, the history of the ranch, and some video presentations. So those are my two liaison reports. Now for my president's report, and this is something that, you know, it's been a topic of discussion in the community for a long time, and I thought it'd be good to, you know, bring us up to date now. So this is about the water facility on San Simeon Creek Road and the cost of this facility. For the past 6 years, since we first put money into the facility, the building of it, and so forth, starting in July of 2014. So what I did was I took about a day every week for a couple of months, added up the figures through the monthly expenditures reports that we get in our board of directors' agenda packets, and you know, like these costs are. Such as, let's say, the building of the plant, the various consultants that we've had down through the years, including our lobbyist that we had in Sacramento for about 3 years, agency fees, legal fees, lab testing, even monthly spraying for gophers, as well as the roughly $660,000 a year that we send to the bank. You know, that's something that we will be doing until August of 2030 to pay off the loan, so we finally own the facility outright. Also, to be as accurate as possible, I subtracted some attorney's costs when that seemed necessary. So, of course, there's been speculation in town that the plan has cost at least $20 million so far. Recently, there was a comment from the chairperson of the North Coast Advisory Council, made the general comment that this plant was ours for a reasonable cost. So this is what I found. So in 2014, when the plant was built by CDM Smith, the plant that began in May of 2014 and, pardon me, essentially ended in November. So from July through December of 2014, the cost was just under $8 million. The following year, the cost was roughly $3.4 million. Since then, the annual amount has fluctuated between just over $1 million to about $2.2 million. So far this year, from January to June, exactly 6 years since the first costs were initiated, the amount is just over $500,000. So the total amount of the cost of the emergency water supply project, the sustainable water facility for the past 6 years, is roughly $17.5 million. As I say, this is approximate costs. They don't include staff salaries, including those paid to our chief engineer, who for many years stated that the large majority of his time was devoted to the facility in one fashion or another. So that's where my report on this, and I thought this would be, you know, valuable information to be given to the members of the public, as well as the candidates for election, if this would happen to come up. So that's my president's report. Let's move on now to future agenda items. Director Rice.
I would like to have a discussion about what things should come before the board. For example, a transfer of position. Do we need to see every assignment to approve it, where somebody buys a waitlist position so it's just a change of assignment? Probably not. If something else comes forward with an intent to serve, what kinds of things does the board think that we want to take a look at, either because we don't have a clear enough policy or because we need the board to be involved in that decision? So that's what I would like to see on the agenda.
All right. Thank you very much, Director Rice. Director Howe, you took your hand down. Is that correct?
Let's back up again.
Oh, you do wish.
I'm basically seconding what Director Rice said, so I would very much like to see that.
All right. All right. Thank you so much. Seeing no further comments on future agenda items, I'm going to adjourn us to closed session and see if there's any public comment from the community. Seeing none, I'm going to adjourn this meeting, and just want to wish everybody the best. We have one member of the public who wishes to speak on closed session. Looks like Christine Heinrich. Ms. Heinrich, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. In evaluating General Manager Weigold, I asked the board to consider Mr. Weigold's partisan approach to development. His resistance to abiding by the law and the Coastal Commission's decisions in approving new construction permit applications is an undesirable demonstration of his favoritism toward developers in what should be a neutral administrative position. I ask the board to remind Mr. Weigold that using his position to advocate for development, especially in these times of megafire, is unacceptable. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Heinrich. So, right now, we're adjourned to closed session. I want to thank everybody for being in attendance. I think the meeting was conducted in a very good fashion. And I want to thank the public comment. And thank you, Ray, for your comments and your utilities report. Everybody take good care out there. And thank you, Pam. And everybody be well. Treat others with kindness and consideration, and everybody wear a mask, and we'll see you back here in about 3 minutes. Thank you.